All right, we're going deep today. Underfill issues, am I right?
Ugh, a mold designer's worst nightmare.
And we've got just the thing to help you sleep better at night. We're diving into an article called, get this, What Are the Best Mold Design Solutions for Underfill Issues?
Catchy, huh?
Straightforward, I like it. So we'll break it down, pull out the good stuff, the actionable stuff, the stuff that'll actually help you make better molds.
Yeah, because who wants to end up with a bunch of half-formed plastic what's-its?
Exactly. Nobody. Waste of time, waste material.
Waste of money.
So right off the bat, this article jumps into gate location, which makes sense.
I mean, it's kind of the starting point, isn't it? Where the molten plastic enters the mold.
But it's easy to underestimate, right? Like, oh, just stick it anywhere.
Huge mistake. It's like
Oh,
thinking,
yeah.
oh, I'll just plant this tree wherever, and then it grows right into your power lines.
Okay, yeah, not ideal.
It can totally mess up your whole flow.
Flow.
Yeah, how the molten plastic, the mullet moves through the mold.
Makes sense. So, bad gate location, bad flow. What kind of problems are we talking here? Just aesthetics or?
Oh no, it's way more than just looks. The article actually gives this example, a toy figure, they put the gate on the side.
Side gate. Sounds unconventional.
It was total disaster. One half of the figure ended up way thicker than the other.
So, like, wonky and lopsided.
Totally. Not only did it look weird, but it also made the figure weak, prone to breaking right at that thin part.
Yeah, I can see that. So symmetry matters.
Big time. Just shifting that gate to the center, boom, problem solved. Balanced filling, stronger figure.
I'm starting to get it. It's like that saying, measure twice, cut once, get that gate right from the start.
Exactly. And speaking of getting things right, the article dives into gate size too.
Right, because bigger is always better, right?
Whoa, hold on there. Not so fast. It's tempting to think that, but a giant gate can crank up the injection pressure.
And that's bad
Well,
because.
think of it like trying to squeeze a whole tube of toothpaste out through a tiny hole. Things can get messy. Flash, yeah. You might even damage the mold itself.
So, how do you find that Goldilocks gate size? Not too big, not too small.
The article really stresses analyzing your product. What are you making? How thick are the walls? It all factors in. Like, say you're molding a giant, thin-walled container.
Tupperware.
Sure, Tupperware. You're gonna need a pretty big gate to fill that thing quickly and evenly.
Right, makes sense. But if you're molding something small and thick.
Like a chess piece or something. A smaller gate will do ya.
Okay, so we've got location, size, anything else?
Oh yeah, they briefly mention multiple gates.
Multiple gates. What, like a two-door entrance?
Kinda, especially helpful for complex parts, lots of nooks and crannies.
Give me an example.
Imagine molding a toolbox with all those little compartments. One gate might just not cut it. Some sections might get starved for melt while others overflow.
So it's like having multiple sprinklers to water your lawn evenly.
Exactly. Multiple gates ensure that melt reaches every corner of that complex part.
I'm sensing a theme here. Is it all about giving that molten plastic a smooth ride?
You got it. And that brings us to another big player runner systems. Think of them as the highway system for your melt.
The highway system. Okay, I'm intrigued. Lay it on me. What kind of traffic jams do we need to avoid here?
Well, first up, runner length. Seems like a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
Shorten those runners, save material, speed things up.
Sounds good to me. Less material, less time, more profit.
Not always. You go too short, you can spike that injection pressure again.
Oh, right, the toothpaste tube analogy.
Bingo. Plus, you gotta think about heat loss. Longer runners, more chance for the melt to cool down and get all sluggish.
So it's a balancing act. Find that sweet spot.
The article actually talks about this case where they shortened the runners, thought they were being all efficient,
Yeah.
ended up having to crank up the melt temperature to compensate for the pressure increase. Totally backfired.
So shorter runners didn't actually save them any time in the end.
Nope. Just added complexity.
Okay, so runner length, check. What else should we be thinking about?
Runner diameter. Bigger diameter, smoother flow, especially for thick parts.
So like a wider highway for those big rigs.
Exactly. The article even gives some numbers. They bumped up the diameter by just 2 millimeter. Bam. Fill time dropped by 15%, and that pesky short shot they were dealing with, gone.
Wow, okay. Small tweaks, big results. But we've gotten the melt to the gate. What about inside the mold itself?
Ah, now that's where things get even more interesting. We got to make sure that melt can breathe. Enter the exhaust system.
Breathe. Okay, now I'm really curious. Tell me more.
Imagine you're trying to fill a bottle with water, but you've got your finger over the opening.
The air gets trapped, right? Doesn't fill properly.
Same thing happens in a mold. If that air can't escape, it'll block the melt, create all sorts of problems.
So we need vents.
Exactly. Little escape routes for that trapped air.
What do they look like, these vents?
Could be grooves, could be holes, strategically placed throughout the mold. The article mentions this project where they added these tiny grooves, like 0.03 millimeters wide. Right. But that's all it took.
Yeah.
Solve their underfill issue right there.
Amazing how these small details can have such a big impact.
It's all connected, and sometimes those traditional vents, they're just not enough, especially when you're dealing with really complex molds.
Intricate shapes, tiny details, that kind of thing.
Exactly. That's when you got to get creative, and that's when you might turn to something like breathable steel. Breathable steel. Sounds kind of crazy, right?
A little bit, yeah. Like, is the mold going to start breathing on me?
No, not quite, but it's pretty wild stuff. Basically, it's steel with these tiny, tiny pores in it.
Pores? Like our skin?
Kinda, but way smaller. You can't even see them. And these pores let air pass right through.
So it's like the whole mold is one giant vent.
You got it. No need to drill holes or anything. The air just escapes through the material itself.
That's pretty ingenious. But wouldn't that make the mold weaker? All those holes?
You'd think so, right? But the article says it's actually super strong.
Strong enough to handle the pressure of injection molding.
Yep.
Those pores are so tiny, they don't really affect the structural integrity.
So it's perfect for those really tricky molds, the ones where you can't even fit a vent.
Exactly. Like super deep cavities, crazy complex geometries. Breathable steel can handle it.
So it's like the superhero of mold materials.
Pretty much. But like all superheroes, it's got its kryptonite.
Which is?
Now, it's more expensive than regular steel, and you need special tools and techniques to work with it.
So not a cure-all, but a powerful tool in the right hands.
That's a good way to put it. But let's shift gears a bit. Go back to those runner systems we were talking about.
The highways for the melt.
Right. And the article dives a bit deeper into runner layout.
Layout.
Yeah, how you arrange those channels. It's not just length and diameter.
So what are the options?
Well, there's the balanced runner system. That's where all the gates get filled at the same time.
Sounds important for those multi-cavity molds. You wouldn't want one cavity filling up way faster than the others.
Exactly. Uneven filling, inconsistent parts. Nobody wants that. Right. So balance is good for, like, making a bunch of identical parts.
Yeah, or even for complex parts where you need everything to fill at a consistent rate.
Makes sense. What are the other layouts?
Well, sometimes you might want to prioritize certain cavities, like if some are more prone to underfill because they're thin or have intricate details.
So you could design the runners to feed those tricky cavities first.
Exactly. It's all about customizing that layout to your specific product and mold.
Okay, so it's not just about getting the melt to the gates. It's about getting it there in the right order, at the right speed.
You got it. Like a well-choreographed dance.
And speaking of smooth moves, we talked briefly about runner surface quality.
Ah, yes. Smooth surfaces, happy melt.
Less friction.
Exactly. The article compares it to a bobsled. Smooth, icy track, you're flying. Rough, snowy track, you're going to struggle.
So a polished runner surface lets that melt glide right through, no problem.
And it helps maintain the melt temperature, too. It keeps it from getting too cool and sluggish.
So it's not just size and shape. It's that fine detail, that smoothness that really matters.
Attention to detail. It's everything in mold making. And getting that perfect surface finish, it's a real art.
I bet. Specialized machining, careful polishing.
Exactly. Takes real skill to get it right. But it's worth it because that smooth flow can make all the difference.
We've covered a lot. From gates to runners, vents, even breathable steel.
And it all comes together, right? All those elements working in harmony to create a perfect part.
And now we're at the final destination. The mold cavity itself.
The heart of the operation. We've gotten them out there, made sure it can breathe. Now we got to make sure that cavity is ready to receive it.
So we're talking about the quality of the mold surface.
You got it. Even a tiny scratch can mess things up.
Yeah, I've seen that. Defects, blemishes, all because of a little imperfection in the mold.
And it's not just about looks. A rough surface can create friction, slow down the melt flow.
And that can lead to, you guessed it, underfill.
Bingo. The article uses this analogy of pouring honey. Smooth surface, flows beautifully, spreads evenly. Rough surface, gets all stuck and clumpy.
So a smooth mold surface is like a perfectly paved road for that molten plastic.
Exactly. And achieving that smoothness, it starts with choosing the right material.
Different materials, different properties, right?
Right. Stainless steel, for example, it's known for its corrosion resistance and its ability to take a high polish. That makes it a popular choice for molds.
And then the machining, the finishing, all those steps play a role too, right?
Absolutely. The precision of the machining, the type of cutting tools used, the polishing techniques, it all adds up.
So it's not just one thing, it's a whole chain of events, all got to be done right to get that perfect surface.
It's a process. And there's even more to it. You can add surface treatments, coatings to enhance the mold's performance.
Like what?
Chrome plating, for instance, makes the mold harder, more wear resistant. Or you can add textured surfaces to help with part release or to create a specific look.
Wow, so much goes into it. It's like a whole science and an art all rolled into one.
It is, and it shows that even in this age of high tech, that craftsmanship, that attention to detail, it still matters.
Couldn't agree more. We've gone deep into the details, from gates to runners, vents to surface finishes.
A real deep dive. And it's not just about injection molding, right?
What do you mean?
These principles, these ideas about optimizing flow, minimizing resistance, they apply to so many things.
Like what?
Think about designing a website or streamlining a workflow in your office. It's all about finding those bottlenecks, those points of friction, and smoothing them out.
So even if you're not a mold designer, these concepts can still be helpful.
Absolutely. It's a way of thinking, a problem-solving approach.
And one of the biggest lessons, I think, is the importance of those little details.
The tiny tweaks that can make all the
Like
difference.
that 0.03 millimeter vent groove.
Exactly. It's a reminder to never underestimate the power of precision and to always be looking for ways to improve, to refine, to get those details just right.
Well said. We've explored a lot in this deep dive, but as with any deep dive, it's just the beginning.
There's always more to learn, more to discover. I encourage you to keep digging into this topic. Keep asking questions.
And remember, the principles we've talked about today, they can be applied far beyond the world of manufacturing.
Whether you're designing a product, optimizing a process, or just trying to make your life run a little smoother, these ideas can help.
Keep learning, keep experimenting, and keep those creative juices flowing.
Great advice. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring.
So we've gone deep, really deep, into the nitty-gritty of mold design. Explored all those little secrets that can make or break a project.
From gate placement all the way to the final finish of the mold surface.
And I think it's safe to say that underfill issues, they don't stand a chance.
Not if you're paying attention to the details.
Exactly. But let's wrap things up here, bring it back to our listeners. What are the big takeaways, the things you really want them to remember?
I think more than anything, I want them to walk away with a sense of just how much thought, how much engineering goes into a good mold design.
It's not just, oh, make a shape, pour in plastic, done.
Right. It's a system. You got to think about the flow, anticipate potential problems, make sure everything works together.
It's almost like you're a plastic whisperer guiding that melt through the mold.
I like that. But yeah, it's about understanding the whole process, not just focusing on one little piece.
So for someone out there who's struggling with underfill right now, what's the first thing they should do?
Honestly, take a step back, look at the big picture. Don't get lost in the weeds of one specific detail.
So not just, oh, my gate's too small, got to make it bigger.
Right, because maybe the gate size isn't the problem at all. Maybe it's the runner layout or the vent system or something else entirely.
Everything's connected.
Exactly. So analyze the whole system, see how all those pieces are interacting.
And don't be afraid to experiment, right?
Oh, absolutely. Sometimes a tiny tweak in one place can solve a problem you're having somewhere else.
It's all about finding those little connections, those subtle relationships.
And that's where that attention to detail comes in. We've seen how even the tiniest things can make a huge difference.
That 0.03 millimeter groove.
Yeah.
Never forget the 0.03 millimeter groove.
Right. It's a reminder that those little details, they matter.
So we've gone deep on mold design solutions for underfill, but really, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Definitely. There's so much more to explore, so many different techniques, materials, processes.
And I think what's really cool is that these principles, these ideas, they go way beyond just injection molding.
Oh, for sure. Thinking about flow, efficiency, attention to detail, that's valuable in any field.
Designing a product, optimizing a workflow, even just planning your day.
It's a way of thinking, a way of approaching problems.
So keep learning, keep experimenting, and never stop chasing those perfect parts.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.